Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Fine, Andrew, thank you. I see that you are all wintry, no palm trees, heavy sweater.
No palm trees. I just first wanted to make sure just to address that we're not going to be talking about the releasing of the Epstein results from.
Oh, I didn't look, but I think there was no new
Was
bunch.
nothing new. It was like, I mean, the matrix that we're living in, particularly in the last 4.5 weeks.
It gets lost in the noise. Agreed.
Yes, potentially intentional. Okay, so let's dive right in. Obviously, been an interesting past week. What are your big takeaways? What are the things, is there anything you think people are missing? Let's hop in.
So we've seen a shift in the narrative. People are getting more worried about growth. 2 weeks ago, we had a big negative surprise with retail sales. Then we got negative surprises in consumer confidence, both Youmish and the conference board. And then this morning, we got another big miss with personal spending. And a big increase in the savings rate, completely out of the blue. And I think where we are at is that all the policy pronouncements of the administration have basically led to a loss of consumer confidence. I think the main worry is the impact of tariff on inflation. 40% of US households cannot meet an unexpected $400 expenditure. So a lot of people are living hand to mouth, and they hear all this tariff talk. They get worried. And if you look at the economic policy index, it's jumped over the past month. And I think that jump is directly related to the increase in the savings rate. But what is interesting is that real income growth was actually well above trend, about, I believe, half a percentage point. So what this means is that at this stage, it's just a loss of confidence. It's not yet translated into an actual slowdown. It still can, because if consumers continue to save more and cut on consumption, businesses will hire less, invest less. So consumer income will go down, and consumption will go down further. So you'll have a sort of a negative feedback loop. My expectations is that we have a growth, not an equity market, but a growth put on the part of the Trump administration that is very smart and diligent advisor are going to diplomatically explain to him that he needs to be a bit more focused and stop scaring people and start thinking about the impact of the tariff or what he's going to do to mitigate the impact of the tariff he keeps announcing. So not just that Canada and Mexico would get a 25% tariff next week, but that China would get another 10%. This is starting to add up, and I understand that consumers are worried. So the administration needs to go through a rethink, or it's going to have a completely different issue on its hand than what it and the markets expected. And my money is that rationality will prevail. This is going to happen, but it's my degree of conviction is not very strong.
So two questions. One, so you don't really believe this narrative that the president views tariffs as a real significant way to increase revenues to help better reduce the deficit. I guess that's my first question. And I guess he's like, this, I told you what, this is what I'm going to do. And don't worry, there'll be tax cuts, other things coming, but this is a way for foreign, for foreign companies, foreigners to help bring down our deficit. And I know it's a difficult time, but that's it. And then the second thing is, the Trump clearly was targeting the stock market, right? He mentioned it many times in the first administration. Has Bessent said convinced him that the real issue is getting the 10-year yields down? And if we can get growth even a bit softer, especially in the beginning, we'll be able to get the Fed to cut rates. We can also issue more debt, longer term, lower rates. And if we can do that, that actually is the best long-term way to address the issue around the deficit. And we're
So,
missing,
yeah.
and we're just missing that, where the market is kind of missing, because that was something he kind of said in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a very different Trump from Trump 1.0. And by the way, let me plug here Bilal's podcast with Joe Lavorgna, who used to work in Trump 1, Trump 1.1, and has a lot of valuable insight, but he's one of his key points is that this time around Trump is much better prepared, and I think this time around the core of the economic strategy is to solidify the blue collar basis of the Republican Party, and that means lifting income, lifting the share of low income American in national income. And so that's why, in my view, Bessent has kept repeating Wall Street will do well enough, but perhaps not as well as in the past. I'm quoting verbatim
Yeah,
this.
I know. We've talked about it in the past,
Yeah.
and yeah, exactly.
So for sure, they don't want to engineer a stock market crash. And between the noises of Doge and Bessent's extraordinary salesmanship, they managed to get the 10-year yields down. And now, of course, with the pessimism about growth, it's come down even further. But I think one key difference with Trump 0.1 is that the policy put this time around could be around growth because they need strong growth to have both real wages, real low wages go up and the stock market not crash because higher growth in wages is negative for profit. So I
Right.
think the put is more on economic growth than on the stock market this time around. I mean,
But it
that's
should go hand in hand somewhat. Yeah.
yeah, I
I
mean,
get, I guess the part that's not, they're not focused on is margins, like you said, so general
that's it.
profitability.
That's it.
Right.
Maybe you get smaller margins, but out of a bigger pie, faster growth.
Right. By the
So
way, that doesn't
yeah.
seem the easiest thing in the world to perfectly engineer. 'Cause
100%. And yeah.
businesses reinvest or grow or expand because their margins are wide.
Totally. And a key element of that strategy, besides, being more disciplined with policy announcements and
Yeah.
not killing growth with a surge in uncertainty, a key element is going to bring down energy prices. And that, I think, has to do with the foreign policy of this administration.
Yeah.
But to come back to your first question about, raising tariff to lower the deficit, yeah, but you need to do it in a sustainable manner. That's why I thought, we would have a little bit of noise with tariffs used as a leverage. And then behind this noise, you would have a steady and predictable increase in tariff. Because if you want to generate
Like
revenue,
2% a month or something in two
Yeah,
years.
because it has to be sustainable, right? If you announce 25% and the next 2 months the economy crashes, yeah, then you have to completely redo your policy. Plus, a lot of policy uncertainty doesn't help with the medium-term goal, which is a manufacturing renaissance. It's not going to happen if business become worried about, what is Trump going to come up with next and start
Right.
pulling their horns. So At this stage, my expectation is still that rationality will prevail. We will get more disciplined messages coherent or consistent, internally consistent policy mix. But I'd say my conviction is only 55%. I think a big difference between Trump 2 and Trump 1 is that with Trump 1, people used to say, you need to take what Trump says seriously, but not literally. I think with Trump 2, you need to look at what Trump does rather than what he says, literally or seriously.
I mean, I agree. I think the biggest issue is it's not even whether there's tariffs or not. It's like it's the uncertainty because
100%.
if you're thinking about expanding the business and you actually think that he's putting a tariff, say American company is putting a tariff on, which would create an opportunity for you to expand your business, fill in the gap of making it more expensive for foreign competitors to come in, and then, which is probably beneficial, but then there's also a risk that he just cancels that like a month later. Then it's like, I think in the end you don't do anything
You
and you're gonna
wait
wait.
for sure.
Yeah, so I don't know how he I'm sure he has some smart people advising him, like, I think the uncertainty thing is the thing that, not sure how he addresses that without, certainly in this, as you said, the only way to address it is a very gradual increase, but a gradual increase is kind of boring and not sexy and doesn't like, grab the headlines and, it's not.
Well, but actually, I believe Trump 2.0 is closer to what you described, that
Yeah.
behind all this noise, I mean, let's remember, he made most of his money being a super successful reality TV star. And he's built this persona, of being very bombastic. Also, his negotiating strategy is to start with something totally outrageous and then
Yeah.
see what people do. But I think behind this persona, there is someone very smart, very determined, and who is thinking long term. At least, I'd say that with a 55%
Yeah.
conviction.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Okay, cool. Anything on the Fed side? Anything on the
Sure.
yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, we've had a shift in the conversation of the Fed over the past few weeks, where, watching all this flurry of executive orders, they've been saying we need to wait and see. And now there is the issue, so with a shift in narrative towards the risk of growth weaknesses. The FOMC members are positioning themselves, should the Fed respond or not respond to those weaknesses, and how proactive the Fed should be. And you've had predictably the hawks like Kansas City President Schmidt saying that the Fed should not respond to slower growth unless disinflation resumes. And in this connection, there is a bit of a pickle. The data has created a bit of a pickle for the Fed in the sense that you're starting to see de-anchoring of short-term and long-term, actually, consumer, I mean, survey-based inflation expectation. And of course, BEs have been going up since very consistently since the election. So far, Powell has ignored it and said it's only long-term expectations that count, and those are stable. And for sure, if you look at the five-year BE, it's not moved
Right.
much. But this is becoming an issue because we've had almost 4 years of inflation above target. So these two developments suggest, in my view, the Fed is not going to be super proactive in responding to any actual growth slowdown. That said, the Fed is like a super tanker. They react very slowly, which is their job. I mean, we have a much shorter term problem.
And quick one, the because I know Antonio mentions it a lot, and I think you know that there's I kind of ha have some sympathy with his view about the financial conditions and the sensitivity to the equity market. If we saw stocks down another 8 to 10%, which would be, you know, a fairly decent pullback. Does that shake the Fed? I would just say, you know, you and I, you know, but you and I have discussed and pushed back on the fear of recession. I feel like for the last 3 years, you know, every time that those fears came up. Now, some of this is self-inflicted, or potentially, right? You know, or maybe there's underlying things. This is just maybe expediting or making it more fragile. But it does feel like the chance of recession may be r rising. And if we did see the market down another 8 to 10%, do you think that could move the Fed to do something, or at least come out with a more I guess first they would come out with a more dovish statements and saying they're watching everything carefully or whatever it is. Obviously, they're not going to cut right away, but yeah, would you say that that would push them or no?
So the big issue with financial condition is endogeneity. If the stock market moves 8 or 10%, it's probably because they think growth is slowing. And so the Fed will so it's more like growth and the stock market are driven by shocks, like the Trump shock, basically. So the Fed's mandate is inflation and growth. So they would react to those, but since the equity market and also the equity market is forward-looking and has a much higher frequency data compared with growth, inflation that are monthly or quarterly. So it could look like they would lead, but in fact, they would be expecting this slowdown. And that's what the Fed would react to. Even though it's observationally equivalent to reacting to tighter financial conditions, the Fed would tell you that their mandate is growth and inflation and the stock market. And by the way, they don't like to be told that they have a put. But observationally equivalent to a put.
One other thing before we go,
So let's talk about next week because there are a couple of really important things. So we get the terrible Friday because on Friday we have both the payrolls and Powell. So Powell obviously setting the stage for the March FOMC and I think trying to minimize points of conflict with the administration while maintaining the independence of monetary policy. So I expect him to say that the US economy is in great shape because it's true. We haven't seen any material decline, and he's going to proclaim that it's in great shape until he can no longer avoid saying that it's not in such a great shape simply because of the inflation risk. He cannot be too proactive in easing policy. And he's going to say that we have to wait and see the impact of the government policies. And of course, the Fed has a dual mandate. But basically, I see him as trying to calm markets and the public expectations on growth, trying to say as many nice things as possible about the administration while making it clear that monetary policy is independent, which, by the way, has been recognized in one of Trump's executive orders, where he declared that all agencies were under the power of the White House, even those considered independent. And he made an explicit carve-out for the Fed monetary policy, which is one of the reasons I still think rationality will prevail with policy announcement, but let's see. So that's, and then the NFP is going to be really interesting because that's when we see the impact of immigration policies on labor supply. And it's clear inflows of illegal migrants to the US have slowed, have probably slowed a lot. And this is not just because of the army is on the border. It's also because migrants do not expect to get as nice a treatment from the Trump administration as they got from the Biden administration. So you also have news about fewer flows of migrants. But the big risk with the mass deportation is that illegal migrants who are already in the US could decide not to turn up to work out of concerns of being deported. And in California, there have been stories about farmers not able to get their oranges picked up precisely for that reason. So
And
we.
that would show up in the notes. So that's always my question. So illegals in the US still show up in the jobs numbers.
So they show up in the payroll, but not in the household survey employment. And that's because the payroll, the data is collected directly for employers. So migrants are probably underestimated, but they are there. The problem with the employment, the household survey employment data is that basically it's computed by applying the survey ratio, so for instance, employment to population, to the population data provided by the Census Bureau. And even though the Census Bureau has lifted its estimate of population for 2025, they are still way below the CBO, so the Congressional Budget Office estimates that take into account illegal immigration. And that's why you have a gap between NFP and household survey data, employment data, which didn't exist before the immigration surge. So, yeah, NFP partly reflect the number of illegal migrants in the
Okay,
US.
so there's not a question that five illegals in five jobs, they leave. And two of those jobs is not fit refilled, but three jobs are filled by American citizens. That won't show up as three new jobs were added.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's basically a net decline of two. I mean, what's going to
So it is
happen?
a net decline of two. It's not a
Yeah.
it's not an increase of three.
No,
Okay.
relative to your
So
baseline.
this would see that, yeah, that was my question. That's how I was trying to understand about how the okay.
But what we are going to see, if there is a contraction in supply, we're going to see not much of an increase in unemployment. So we are going to see lower payroll. And I was looking at the consensus. It's about 160K for total and 130K for private, which, by the way, implies a fairly big increase in public employment when DOGE is cutting. So anyway, let's ignore that. The what's really important here is that if we have a decrease in supply, we're going to see a decrease in unemployment or no change in unemployment and a continued increase in wages. Wage growth has been picking up for the past few months.
Right. That I remember that you were ahead of the curve
I
calling
was too early.
you too early. But
I was too
no,
early.
the recent numbers have been pretty strong. I don't think so, because even like 2 unemployments ago, I think the wage growth was pretty high
Yeah.
and the number was even more subdued. And then obviously last time the wage growth was pretty high, but the number was actually strong.
And yeah, and I think the market is underestimating wage growth. They still see it at 30 basis point. When last month was 50, I think if there is a scope for surprise, positive surprise, it's probably with wages, and scope for negative surprise with headline payroll because a 30K increase in
Yeah.
public sector employment in the current climate, it sounds like big.
It sounds off, right?
Yeah, it
It's
sounds a
off.
bit off.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, as we like to do, just a quick summary of some of the key pieces. Global rates weekly, our financial conditions are risk to US growth. That's a bunch of obviously stuff you guys had the debate with, but that Antonio's doing, also looking through kind of Henry's stuff, views on ECB. I was just looking at the Fed and the ECB AI central bank indices, and ECB has been more neutral. No surprise, they've been cutting and consistently cutting, and the Fed has been slightly more hawkish. Let's see if that changes, but so far, even though some of the growth numbers, I guess it's they have to be because we've had some of those inflation, short-term consumer-driven inflation numbers that look pretty high. We took profit on the dollar short
So if
basket.
I could just, I think it's important to mention to our listener our new copilot that allows them to interrogate the information put out by the ECB, the Fed, and the BOJ. So if they want to see what are their views on inflation, they don't have to pull out five different speeches, read them. They can ask the our chat,
Yeah.
and it's fantastic. In my view, this is going to be one of the killer apps of AI.
Yes, agreed. So just people understand it's one of the agents now, so you can see everything, can see all of our stuff, they can see just all of the information we've collected from all of the statements, different publications from the Fed, ECB, Bank of England, and Bank of Japan, and you can interrogate through whatever prompt you come up with, each of those things to better understand. And also, it'll give kind of a frame of reference, kind of where our indices scoring is coming from, as well. So a bunch of stuff around tariffs, obviously, what our network is thinking. So, we've been really trying, been very active, kind of two-way dialogue with a lot of our clients. So, Bilal has been trying to use a bit of AI and kind of capturing a lot of those interactions and putting that together, obviously anonymizing everything. But I've been getting amazing feedback from people. So if you haven't seen that, check out those publications. Liang on the China Watch. For now, we're still kind of questioning, for obviously from the tariff side, but just in general, the probably the bullishness on China is probably overdone. And then the government's true commitment to having a much more business-friendly environment. Kind of closed out our long gold trade. Obviously, that was a great trade. In fact, I think Varesha put out a few things talking about in the short term, maybe we see a real pullback as flows have been slowing for gold. A lot of questions, just in general across FX rates, interesting stuff, carry, momentum. So wish everyone kind of the best of even the weekends now towards financial markets. I'm sure as kind of our event monitor shows, even the weekends now, it's not like it's like nothing happens. Actually, the option markets are overweighting much more than they have in the past, probably like Monday and Tuesday FX vol. Because of the opportunity that Trump administration announces something either after the close or even over the weekend. So something to check out. Want to wish everyone a great weekend, obviously including you, Dominique, and yeah, all the best.
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
Awesome. Thanks. Bye.
Super.